Oh my goodness, you're wilder than last week's. Hello everybody. Hello, hello capacity crowd, and welcome along to this week's edition of Life's a Pitch TV, episode 8. Can you believe 8 on our list of episodes? It's just been an incredible roller coaster and a great journey that you've been on with us since we started all those weeks ago. It's brought to you in association, of course, with DPS Tech, and a massive thank you to our other sponsors as well for making the show happen. All About Hearing, marketing company Ginger Pickle, Forward Floors, Come Hither Design, the Hudson Group, Sound 4, Pro Audio, and Venue 16 as well. So thank you very much to all of our sponsors for making us get onto air every week. It's a really, really wonderful thing that they've done to support us. Now, there are still some sponsorship opportunities available. Just email lifesapitchtv@gmail.com, lifesapitchtv@gmail.com. And I'll tell you what, something very special. We've got some special events coming up. So for more details, go to that website, www.lifesapitch.tv. And I can tell you that the tickets are going really, really well for this cracking night out at Venue 16 on the 30th of November. We'll be filming the show in the big Venue 16 Willow Suite. And then we'll have an Ipswich Town Question of Sport straight after. And we're live on the road at the Dove as well. So www.lifesapitch.tv to get those tickets. All coming?
Yeah!
Are we sure? Oh, you're not sure. Let me introduce you to the team. It's Terry Butcher. Good to see you, Butch.
Good to be back.
They're not a bad crowd this week, are they?
It's the best crowd we've had.
I know. Fantastic.
But I say that every week.
You do indeed. That's why you're so popular. And unfortunately, Phil Ham is poorly. Aww. You can do better than that. He's really ill. Aww. But never mind. We've replaced him with Ted Lasso and Ed Sheeran tonight. Yay! Fantastic. Takes two to replace Phil Ham. It really does. Also, big thank you to John Parker, Richard Garrett and Mark Calver on technicals over in the corner. Yeah. And capacity crowd, give yourself a big round of support. Now, our special guest this week, Butch, is someone that really should have been here several episodes ago, but he was swanning off down under in Australia. Someone you know reasonably well, I think.
Well, we have slept together a few times. I mean, we have roomed together a few times, yes. So, yeah.
It's all coming out now, isn't it, eh?
Yeah, he's one of my best mates, and, you know, he's been fantastic for me in my career, for Ipswich Town Football Club, and for a lot of other clubs that he's been at as a player and a manager. So he's had a great career, and it doesn't stop at football, does it? But we'll find that out.
We will indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, give a big welcome. It's Russell Osman! Back from Australia. Welcome, Russ. Good to have you along.
Good day, mate.
We've got you in the guest spot this week, but your seat over there has been reserved with the BT cushion since we started. So, welcome.
Thank you.
You went to Australia for a very special reason, didn't you?
I did. One of my kids has lived down there for the last 4 years, and they were expecting their first child in, I think it was due on the 25th of July, so we set off nice and early on the getting there on the 13th, and baby arrived on the 15th. So just made it in time.
Congratulations.
Had a great 7 weeks down in Melbourne.
And what's his name?
Bobby Benjamin Osman.
There we go. Big round of applause. Bobby Benjamin.
Thank you.
A tractor boy at heart. Yep. What was it like down there for the women's football down there?
The Matildas?
Yeah.
The Matildas we've just been singing about. There was great enthusiasm for the ladies' game down there at the moment. Massive following. You just feel that it's not really going to help the men's game down there. They keep the men's soccer scene down there a little bit suppressed. The Aussie rules football, where they just kick it, chase it, kick it, punch it, kick it, and try and kick it through a set of goals down there. And that is massive down in Victoria and Melbourne. And it's massive across Australia, you know, and that is their main sport, you know, and that's how they're going to stick with it, you know. And no matter how well the Matildas did, even if they'd have won the Women's World Cup, final and had a kiss on the lips or whatever from you know, whoever. I still don't think it would do enough to generate enough interest in the men's game down. You've been down there, Terry, you know, and there's the politics down there is a bit heavy, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's about the fifth sport, isn't it, when you look at
it? Yeah,
yeah. Oh, you've got Aussie rules, rugby league, rugby union,
just
cricket.
Behind crocodile wrestling.
Yeah, I think it is. But it is. It's tough. They've done pretty well to do what they've done. Yeah. And everybody thought it was going to be like the J League, when the J League was poor to start with. But then, wow, that's one of the top leagues in the world now. Yeah. So eventually they might do it. I don't know. But there's still a lot of infighting there, and there's still a lot of politics and power grabbing and all these kind of things as well. But I hope that the women's game does take off down there, because, you know, sport is just fantastic in Australia. Yeah. I mean, you went to the race courses a few times, but in general, competitive sport is just incredible.
Yeah, everybody likes a bet on the horses down there. They like a bet on the football. They've got great golf courses. Everywhere's nice and tidy. It's a bit expensive, but, you know, they pay good.
So are you going to emigrate there soon? Are you going to get out there soon?
I think if my wife has any choice in the matter, we'll be there probably next year. But I can't. No, I think I'll be staying here a bit
Did
longer.
You both play down there? Have you both played down there in Australia?
We made our debuts, didn't we, down there?
1st of June 1980. Sydney Cricket Ground.
And then came back the next day.
And then came back the next day, yeah. We're out there for about 3 days.
What, playing on a cricket ground?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Hard.
Very hard.
Yeah, didn't take spin at all. So, you know, if you whacked anybody up in the air and they landed, you know, in the middle of the wicket, it hurt. It was like concrete, wasn't it?
Yeah, because it's raised up, you see. It's about a foot higher than the rest of the pitch. And it's bone hard. And then we played in the 1st of June, which is the summer, and it was, you know, it was wet and slippy. So you had to decide what studs you had to wear when you went out there. So,
yeah.
But it was crazy. It was, you know, you're clip-clopping across the cricket square, and then you're sliding around on a very soaked outfield. But, you know, it was good.
And this was, Bobby took you out there, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yes, he did. Yeah. It was classified as a B-team game. But then they said, well, a B-team match, that's a full international cap anyway. So it's where I got my first cap. Well, we both got our first caps. But it was a long way. It was a long way just to, you know, you fly in, we train the next day, we played the next day, and basically flew back the day after.
Mm. Yeah, you know, we didn't see much, but we saw a certain area called King's Cross. Anybody heard of that in Sydney? No? Well, thank God for that.
They'll all be Googling later, I'll tell you.
It was
a
little bit like Soho, isn't it?
A little bit like Soho, yeah. Very much like Soho.
But the problem is, we'd had such a long flight out, we'd only just recovered from having a few beers on the way out, playing the game, to then get back on the plane again and have a few more beers to come back home. Unbelievable.
That's really important on long-haul flights to keep your fluids up, isn't it?
Oh, very, yeah. Very, very important.
Really important.
They had, for England, people like Phil Parks got a full cap. Frank Lampard Senior got a full cap. Alan Devonshire got a full cap.
He was my tailor.
Was your tailor?
Frank Lampard Senior was my tailor on the trip, because my jacket turned up about six sizes too big for me. So it was too late to get it altered or anything. So every time I wore it, Frank Senior just tucked it in for me with a couple of pins and made sure I was looking pretty damn smart.
We went out after the game. We went out on the harbour, had a lovely harbour tour, and it's beautiful if you go there. And we had this big buffet, and Frank Lampard was helping himself to the buffet, and the prawns out there were just massive, unbelievable, supersized. And he got this prawn, and he says, "Whoa, no, just look at this, boys, look at this." So he says, and he bit into it, but it didn't have, it had all the shell on, nothing else. It had the shell. And he bit the shell on it, and he ate everything. The shell, the tending, what do they call it, antennae and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
The eggs, everything. Everything. We weren't very hungry after that, to be honest.
No, I'm not surprised. And you managed that there for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, it was about 5 minutes, I think. Yeah. I was out there, yeah. It was 8 months, but that was a season. And, yeah, it was, the football was rubbish, to be honest, but the lifestyle was just brilliant. We used to train in the morning at 9 o'clock because, you know, sometimes at 8:30, 8 o'clock because it was so hot. And then I'd phone Rita back and just say, look, get the packed lunch ready. So she would then get everything and go down to Sharks Bay or something like that. bottle of rosé and sort of thing. Like,
and
you know,
barbecue out and a few tinnies. A
few tinnies, yeah, it's brilliant.
You can always do that. He nipped down to Nacton Shores or somewhere like that. It'd be just the same, wouldn't it?
Yeah, down to, yeah, Felixstowe Docks. That'd be unbelievable, yeah.
Enough of Australia. Yeah. You were both at the game on Saturday. What a game, wasn't it, everybody?
Yes.
That was just jaw-dropping. 2-0 down to come back and win 3-2. Your assessment, Russ, of that?
It's showing that we have stronger qualities than last year that we're going to need this year. We still make the odd mistake, and I think that now starting to realise that at this level you're going to get punished harder. The game is harder in general anyway. The opposition are quicker than you used to. And you can tell by the look on the player's face, you know, going into the second half, they're thinking, all right, we've got ourselves back in the game, but this is hard work. You know, Leif Davis actually played a whole 90 minutes, I think, you know, but he was blowing, you know, and he was blowing with 20 minutes to go. And the problem is a lot of the players don't get many 90-minute spells under the belt, do they? You know, they play 75 minutes. They never take centre-half off after 60 minutes, 70 minutes. You know, they take all the fancy Danny players off. But I think the team in itself, you know, I think they learned a lesson there. That if they dig in and if they show the character that they're going to have to show this year, that you can dig out a result from behind. Whether they can do that away from home if they go 2-0 down or not, I don't know. But it was great for them to learn that they can actually do that at home.
What do you think, Butch?
Well, I think the key was Broadhead's goal. It was only 7 minutes after Cardiff got the second goal. So if it had gone longer, 15, 20 minutes, then I think the resolve would have probably waned. But what the goal, Broadhead goal, and it was a hell of a goal. It really was a great strike. Yeah. It lifted everybody out of their seats. It really did. And, you know, there was the belief there from everybody in the ground. Did you all believe that we could win? Yeah? Yeah. As soon as that goal went in, you sort of felt, wow, here we go. And it was just not one-way traffic, but there was certainly a period of dominance then to get the third goal. And I think Big Freddie was the least aware person that the ball was going to hit him in the face and go in. I mean, that's a striker, isn't it? The ball hits them anywhere and it goes in the back of the net.
But that's Freddie, isn't it? You know, Freddie Ladapo, if the ball's pinging about the six-yard box, he will be the one Ipswich Town player that you can guarantee will be there. And it might go in off the back of his heel, or off the back of his backside, off his chin, whatever. But he'll be the one in there. You know, and that's, I wouldn't say it's an art, but it's a knack. It's a goal scorer's knack, just being in there and hunting it down to the last minute. You know, and sometimes you get your rewards. And there's a lot of bullets fly around that 18-yard box. And the closer you get a goal, a lot of people think, oh, there's a few hard players around that 6-yard box. But Fred is always in there, doesn't mind going in there, doesn't mind getting clattered. And by going in there regularly, you get your just rewards.
A word about Haladki as well, who I thought had a good game, made a spectacular save towards the end of the game as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he's done very well. He's made one or two, you know, half errors, if you want to call it that. And I thought after Leeds United, he's going to be straight back in the team sort of thing if Christian Walton was fit. But no, he has done well. And I know when he gets the ball at the back and puts his foot on it and stops it, nobody knows what he's going to do, I think, and don't think he knows what he's going to do, but he actually does pretty well. So, you know, I think the players are looking at him thinking, what's he going to do now? What's he going to do? But he does it well, and you know, the longer
you're
you play
getting soft
with
in your old age with goalkeepers, you are, aren't you?
I know, I'd have took him
you
off, but there we are.
Rip them to pieces.
Yeah, with goalkeepers. It's only because they don't play outside, they're useless in the
Cooper would have done okay, wouldn't he?
Cooper would have done well.
Good footballer.
Yeah, Chris Woods, when I was with him, he was a good outfield player. Always looked good, but he was a good outfield player.
I mean, it worries the crowd sometimes when we're playing out from the back. You can feel the nervousness about it. And Connor Chaplin mentioned this in our first show. Yeah. And he said, come on, we love it. We love it. But I said, well, come on, we're not quite so sure, are we? I mean, it's a bit nervy, isn't it, on occasions? But they seem to manage all right.
Yeah, they do. I think it's the modern game now. You play out from the back. You don't kick it long. We can kick it long if you play out and they're under pressure and they get pressurised. Well, Leeds United pressurised us really, really well. But Cardiff, not so much. And the more the game went on, Cardiff tired as well. So they were able to drop off a little bit. But, you know, you've got to have belief in it. You've got to have players that can do it to start
with. But I'm like you. He does make me twitch a little bit in my seat. yeah. when he does, he puts his foot on the ball and moves it a little bit and moves it the other way a little bit. And I'm thinking, oh.
I think it's called entertainment, to be honest.
Is it? It'll be interesting to see when Christian Walton's back fit again, you know, how he goes, because I think Christian Walton has a better long ball delivery, you know, especially to Wes Burns, that he has been able to use and use to maximum effect, really, on occasions, you know, and Hladky doesn't have that in his armour.
Okay, then, Hladky, whatever his name is, and Christian Walton, who's better with the ball at their feet?
I'd say Walton.
Walton? Mark?
I get quite nervous when he does it. I don't know about how you feel, but I get quite some nods, I think. I get quite nervous when both of them are doing it, to be quite honest with you. Yeah. I mean, it works, but there are a couple of occasions I've seen Walton and you think, oh, come on, kick it out. Yeah. And he's faffing around with it, but it seems to work for them. They seem to be very comfortable, even if we're not watching it.
And they actually, if they play it right and the team that's pressing them doesn't press as well as it should do, they get out and get out easy and can score goals. They've done that in the past where the whole move has gone the whole length of the pitch and scored some great goals.
What will it have done to the confidence of the team with that performance ahead of the international break? Good time to do it?
Always a good time to do it. And you always wonder now, is it a good time to have an international break, or would it have been better to go straight into the next game? Yeah, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's what it is. You know, we've got an international break. Some of the players will have a bit of a breather here. Some players on international duty will be playing another game and doing a bit of extra, a little bit more work than probably the lads at home. We just have to hope everybody comes back in the fit well and ready to go again at club level.
Well, it's certainly nice to finish that little bit of the season with that fantastic win. It's given us all a lift, hasn't it, don't you think?
Yeah.
Second in the league. I mean, fantastic, isn't it, really?
Yep, very good.
I know it's early doors, but we're still up there. What a great start.
Oh, we'll take it.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit like Kevin Keegan sort of style. You know, we'll score more goals than you. But
that's entertaining, isn't it?
But it is. These are the games that we've wanted to see for so many years here, really. Getting like games like this, it's never clear-cut. There's always going to be, well, you know, the ifs and maybes and all these kind of things. It does swing from end to end. And yes, you want to see that. If we lose a game like Leeds, you'd say you're not disappointed, because you just say, well, okay, we didn't lose, but it was a hell of a game, and we gave them a right good test. So yeah, I think it's good. And if it continues like that, and coming up now, they've got three away games out of four: Sheffield Wednesday, Southampton, Blackburn, and Huddersfield. Southampton might be a test down there, but of the others, you'd say, you know, interesting. And this will tell us a lot. These next four games will tell us a lot.
Well, I'm fingers crossed that everything continues to go the way it is. Now, you are special guest this week, which is lovely. You will eventually be sitting over there. We've kept it warm for you with BT's cushion. Lots to talk to you about. Lots of questions have come in from the crowd. But, of course, we've got someone here that knows you really, really well. And I'm hoping, Butch, that we're going to hear some cracking stories about Mr. Osman tonight, and maybe the pair of you together. I mean, when did you first set eyes on each other? Was it love at first sight?
You asking me, or asking me dad? No, he used to look after me on the pitch. Every now and again, if there was somebody on the pitch that was getting a little bit naughty, then I used to sort of like try and equal things out a little bit, you know, and give them a little dig. But I could do that because I know I was playing alongside a bodyguard, you know. So if he did get a little bit heated, then Terry, I need a bit of help now. So he always looked after me that way.
I looked after you in the nightclub afterwards as well, if I remember correctly.
Well, I can't remember
I was
that.
Your minder and bodyguard then.
You did do a very good job, though, did you?
Not all the time, no, not all the time. But because you were single then, and it was very interesting.
It was a challenge.
Yeah.
So who was at the club first?
What, the nightclub?
I think me on both counts, I think. It's funny, you might not realise this, but I actually picked up a trophy for Ipswich Town Football Club before I'd actually started working full-time with them. And that was because 74-75, we won the FA Youth Cup. We beat West Ham United, and I was just coming to the end of my last school term, and I was playing for the youth team as a schoolboy in those days, and I was captain of the side, and we won the final. We had 16,000 at Portman Road for the second leg of the final, and Alan Kirbishley was the West Ham manager, and I just remember that John Cobbold had a fantastic speech at the Cobdock Hotel afterwards, where he stood up completely pissed and basically said to all the mums and dads of all the players, of the Ipswich Town players, he said, listen, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for producing a team that's won us the FA Youth Cup. If you could all disappear now up to your rooms and get on with a bit of shagging, as he called it, he said, and then we might have the same again in another 16 years' time. And then he just slid under the table. Yeah, he was great. But, you know.
Oh, as a young lad, when you're watching that, what are you thinking?
What a chairman. I want to play for him. But Terry will tell you stories about Mr. John. You know, and we had an occasion over in the States somewhere where we thought it'd be very nice if a couple of players took Mr. John out for dinner one evening. So I think it was in Miami.
Well, I can't remember, but it was an American city somewhere, yeah.
Somewhere like Miami, Tampa, whatever. And, you know, we grabbed hold of Mr. John, who's always seven parts to the wind anyway. He said, Mr. John, we'd like to take you for dinner. So I said, okay. So we drew up outside this restaurant, and it was a Japanese restaurant. We thought we'd have a bit of Japanese. So fantastic. A few bottles of sake on the table, which he absolutely thought was disgusting. He didn't like those at all. And bit by bit, you know, the food came out. We're having a good time. And he said, Terry Russell, I've just got to go to the toilet. And he came back and he said, those toilets are absolutely disgusting. I'm just going to get a taxi and drive to the nearest five-star hotel, use their toilets, and then I shall be back again. So just wait there for me. So we're running up a decent, hefty bill on the table now, so we weren't going to run off without Mr. John coming back. And sure enough, he jumped in the cab, went to the hotel, came back again 20 minutes later, and just carried on the evening. Great, wasn't he?
He was. I mean, you're talking about fish drinking. He was unbelievable, yeah. And his brother was the same as well.
Yeah.
And I remember, because we went to Hawaii, didn't we, in 1977, and we were youth team players in those days. Because of international matches, the squad was depleted, few of the stars there and few of the schoolboys. Alan Brazil came as well.
Yeah.
He didn't know he was coming until the bus left from Portman Road, and Trevor Wymart didn't turn up, but he had his suitcase and standby. And then Trevor didn't turn up, so Bobby Robson says, right, you're on. So he was on the bus. So the three of us went out there, but we were, it was the Queen's Jubilee, 1977. So we were up in the room, I think it was round about sort of 10 or 11. We've had a good night the night before, because we were training in Hawaii. We weren't playing a game. We weren't training, because we were running around.
It was at an end of season, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were running around absolutely five sheets of the wind sort of thing. So, but then we got the call from the Cobolds, right, you'll be down here in 10 minutes. It's 12 o'clock and we're celebrating Her Majesty's Jubilee. So we came and went, here we go, I don't want to drink anymore. But we went down and they had this drink called Mai Tai. Have you had a Mai Tai?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a rocket fuel, really. So we had these Mai Tais all afternoon, didn't we? And I remember after about 3 hours thinking, I'd better go to the toilet here. So I tried to get up, but my legs are gone. I couldn't walk. I fell over. I couldn't walk. And honestly, couldn't walk. I had to crawl to the toilet. It was amazing.
Second half syndrome.
Yeah, I still made it back, but yeah, they were just incredible. They really were
brilliant fans,
and they were passionate about Ipswich Town, weren't they? Was there a kind of serious side to them at all, or not? Or
no.
Was it all kind of alcohol fueled?
No, all alcohol fueled. I came out to the Centre Spot restaurant one day, and I was walking through the bar because we're playing Arsenal at 3 o'clock. So I think Mr. Robson was still in the restaurant with a couple of the players. So it must have been about 1:15, 1 o'clock. And we would normally go back over to the changing room, put a bit of training kit on and go up in the gymnasium and play a bit of head tennis, whatever. But as I'm coming through the bar, Mr. Pat was there. And Mr. Pat said, Osman, come and have a drink. I said, Mr. Pat? Mr. Robson's still in the restaurant. We're playing Arsenal at 3 o'clock. I think I'm playing. I can't have a drink. Osman, come and have a drink. And I said, Mr. Pat, I will get the sack. Mr. Robson's in there. Some of the players are still in there. We're playing Arsenal. Osman, Mr. Robson is an employee of this company. So are you at the moment. When I say, I am the chairman, and when I say, have a drink, you will have a drink. So I said, okay, I'll have a small Guinness. I thought I could get away with a quick small Guinness. I turned around, and he turned around to the barman, and he said, pint of Guinness for Mr. Osman. And I stood there on the corner of the bar, when it was about 1 o'clock now, having a pint of Guinness, knowing that we're playing Arsenal a couple of hours later. We won.
Did you see Mr. R at all?
No. It was the fastest pint of Guinness I have ever drunk in my life. 3.2 seconds, I think.
How did you end up at town? How did it start?
It started because I was playing for a village team. My dad ran a pub in Repton called the Bull's Head. And I was playing for Repton Village boys under 16s on the Sunday. On the Saturday, I was playing rugby because I went to a grammar school. I'd captained England schoolboys at rugby at under 16 level. And the Repton Casuals senior side got to the final of the Derby District County Cup or whatever it was. And I got asked to play in the final. So I played alongside a fellow called Gordon Bird, who was like 6 foot six. So I didn't have to worry about winning anything in the air again. Story of my life. When we won the game, Sir Bobby's brother Tom lived in the area, lived in the Midlands, and somebody had told him about me playing for Repton Casuals and playing in the final, came to watch the game, came back and obviously told Sir Bobby. I then get a letter inviting me down on trial. Came down on trial, stayed at the Carlton Hotel on Burner Street all those years ago. And those are the days when Ron Gray would go out of his way and make sure that you got two or three coachloads of kids coming down from the northeast and the northwest. They didn't dig many out from Burton-on-Trent, where I was coming from. And things went well, you know, and I started playing for the youth team, even though I was still at school. Charlie Woods used to drive up some Fridays and pick me up at probably about 6 o'clock in the evening, drive me back so we get back to his about 10 o'clock. Terry might be staying at Charlie's at the same time, so me and Terry stay at Charlie's place with him and Pat, and we play the youth team game the following day, and then Charlie would take me back middle of the afternoon or after the first team game if the first team were playing at home. And they said, or Charlie said, you know, they had to be prepared to go the extra mile as a club to make sure that they got the best kids. They couldn't compete with your West Hams, your Chelseas, your Arsenals and stuff like that, you know. So they thought if they got somebody good, they had to make sure that they managed to keep them, like they did with Kevin Beattie, I suppose, and yourself.
Well, they didn't really go out of the way to keep me, but I was 17, so you had a couple of years on me on that one. But you're in the team ahead of me, and you got into the first team ahead of me. And it was in September 1977.
77 against Chelsea, yeah.
Against Chelsea, 1-2-1. Is that the score?
1-0, I think.
Oh, 1-0, sorry.
Brian told me.
But it was that 1977, okay, what's the date now? So that's, you're looking at what? How many years now is it? 56 years?
It's a long time ago. I know that.
No, 46 years, if my maths is correct. And is that right, 46?
Yes, that's right.
Well, there's only one mathematician here tonight, so
that's why I didn't join in.
So 46 years ago. So that, I mean, that's just incredible, yeah. Really, when you think back how time has flown and how much your career's evolved and our career's evolved and the club and everything else like that. But it was utopia at the time. It was just wonderful just to be at the football club with Charlie Woods in particular, who was an unbelievable coach.
Oh, he was so
hard as nails. Yeah, they're all hard as nails. All Geordies are hard as nails, but. Jeez. It made you a man. It made you special. Made you feel strong.
But we had to clean the floor. You were responsible for players' kit. You had to clean the players' boots. You had to make sure that the kit that you put in the drying room was back on the pegs the following morning. Even though they'd been wet and sweaty the day before, you just hung them up, took it out of the drying room the following day, hung it back on the peg, and that was it. You only had two sets of kits, and then it might have got washed once during the week. Unbelievable.
It stunk, didn't it? It was awful.
Oh, it did stink.
But our days off, we got a Wednesday off sometimes. We train twice on the Monday, twice on the Tuesday. We were absolutely knackered. So they said, you know, you have Wednesday off. But they didn't really want you to have Wednesday off because they said, like, you've got more to improve on. You've got this and this and this. Yeah. So we used to come in on our own and kick a ball about and long passing and all these kind of things as well on our own. So we never had a real break until probably a Sunday. But it was because you love football and you're at a club that, you know, you want to be at, and you want to be at forever if you could. Yeah.
But our lunch, Mark, sorry, it was we used to nip over to the Sporting Farmer, and it was chip butty with or without gravy. And that was it.
For everybody, Alan Hunter, remember Alan Hunter having it? Wow, I couldn't believe it. If it was good enough for him, it was good enough for us.
Was that the club nutritionist that recommended that?
That's right.
Thoroughly, very good. It didn't do us any harm.
What was it like when you arrived and there's Beattie and Hunter there?
Well, you couldn't really see anything in the distance beyond them because you thought, well, they are like two immovable objects that, you know, are going to be there for a long, long time. And I think as a 16-year-old, you think, well, all I've got to do is try and learn the game and just see where we go, really. I was fortunate because they were unfortunate in that they picked up niggling little injuries. Alan Hunter was an absolute diamond as far as I was concerned. He was as hard as nails, hard as a diamond, hard as nails, ruthless. He once told me after a game that I'd played well. And I must have played with him like 50 times. And once he said to me, well played afterwards. But when I left Ipswich Town Football Club in 1985, I think Alan had left in about 1982. And it's a bit acrimonious the way we left because there's no money. Bobby Ferguson had to move players out. I got sort of told that I'd got to go. I was next on the list. And it got a little bit nasty, really, you know, which was a shame. But Alan wrote me a letter, and I'd signed for a letter this time, and suddenly in the post, it's probably the last letter I ever received from anybody. And he wrote me a letter, got great handwriting, Alan, and he just said, listen, the club's in a bit of turmoil at the moment. It's not the manager's fault. Just get on with the rest of your career. Enjoy it. You're a good player. You've gone to a good club. You've had a great 10 years at Ipswich. Just make sure you have another great 10 years of professional football.
And that's a lovely gesture, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Terrific.
Don't we love Big Al? Yeah. We love Big Al. Yeah. Fantastic. And, of course, those injuries gave you your opportunities. And was it the same for you, Butch, as well?
Yeah, it had to be, really, because, you know, you can't displace Hunter and Beattie. They're just absolute legends. So they were there for, you know, if they'd stayed fitter, then we don't know what would have happened. But, you know, someone's sort of pain and everything else like that, someone gets a bit of joy. So we were lucky, and we'd played together before in the youth team. We played in the reserve, so we knew each other's game very well. I'm left-footed, Russell's right-footed, or two-footed, and, you know, we complemented each other very well. And we were playing for the under-21s. Remember, we went to Sweden. I made my debut. I think you'd played shortly before that. We went to Sweden, Stockholm, and Bobby Robson, he was there. I think Ron Greenwood was still the manager of England, was it? Yeah, 79, yeah. So, but Bobby was out there as well, and he was taking the B squad. It was a B game in Austria. He was taking them. And I remember being in the hotel in Sweden, and we'd gone out in the morning for a walk, and we'd seen this joke shop. So we went into the joke shop, and I picked up this. It was what I call a dog, right? A dog is done something, and it looks like a Mr. Whippy. If you know what I mean?
It was dog poo.
But it was plastic, right? It was brown. Right. It looked really good. So it didn't smell either. But so it's Bobby's. We're having a coffee, and that Bobby comes around. He says, "Look at this hotel. You know, all the best for England." And he was waxing lyrical about this hotel. It's a fantastic place. You think yourselves lucky you're here, and all that sort of thing. Okay, Gavin, right? And then he was walking about, and he was looking at this and looking at that, and I'd placed Mr. Whippy on the floor right near us, and Bobby came back, And he's walking along, look at this, lads, look at this, lad. And he looked at it and he saw it and he said, who's done this? And we thought, well, it's not one of us, Gaffer. What else? He said, look at this. He says, I'm going to go to the manager. He went straight to the manager and berated the manager. And he brought the manager back. But in the meantime, we'd picked it up and put it in my pocket and ran away. If you'd been to the joke shop as well, hadn't you?
Yeah, I got a couple of bottles of ink. But ink that, you know, you could throw it all over somebody's white shirt and it would just evaporate and disappear within, like, you know, 5 or 10 seconds. So I saved it till we went on the train journey going after one game. We had a train journey into Romania,
Austria,
somewhere like that. And Big Joe Corrigan was a goalkeeper, and Joe, 6'4", 6'5", man mountain, and he used to have this habit of punching you and lifting your arm up and punching you just under your armpit. He broke Derek Statham's ribs one day doing that, just play fighting. So Joe's larking about and he's got his England suit on and everything like that, you know, nice white shirt. And he's walked past us. We'd had a few beers on the train as we're going up, and we're still on the train. And he's walked past me and I've just gone, shh, and it's all gone straight across him, like, you know. And I'm thinking, he's going to go ballistic. He's going to throw me out the window, something like that. And he looked at his shirt. He's like, oh. So he just ripped his shirt off and threw it out the window. No, Joe, it'll disappear. What do you mean it'll disappear? It's invisible ink, is it? Oh, you. So he made everybody then take the socks off or something?
No, the shirts went off.
Shirts off. All shirts the shirts first, went off.
In socks.
So you left travelling with the England squad just in your jacket, a tie, no shirt. And
of course, the gaffer, Bobby's up the front in the first class and we're back in cattle class. And he's seen us go on the train and we've got the England suits on and ties. And he saw us come off the train. He thinks, oh, my God, what my players have been doing on that train. But it was the end of season then, anyway. We just pointed
to Joe Corrigan and the gaffer just went, oh, okay, leave it.
FA Cup run, you were part of that, weren't you?
Yeah. Fortunate to play in 4 rounds of the FA Cup run. I can't believe you don't get a medal for not playing in the final after being in four. So I played Bristol Rovers, Cardiff, Millwall. What was the other one? But the Millwall game, I mean, we got evacuated off the pitch three times. And again, Alan was playing that day, Alan Hunter, so I was pretty safe hands there. The FA Cup was a fantastic achievement. I didn't play in the final, but just to be part and parcel of the setup in those days, absolutely terrific. It's where I first met John Motson. And John Motson became a great friend. He was a great friend of Ipswich Town Football Club as well. And Mr. Pat's funeral, I think, at the Guards Chapel. John was there and he invited myself and my wife to have afternoon tea with him at the Savoy. Motty was a real class act. He was a real proper gentleman.
And he was a Town fan, really, wasn't he?
He was.
He would never admit it, but he was, wasn't he?
He was one of us.
He used to write program notes and all sorts, didn't he, you know?
He was one of us.
Yeah. Motty was a tractor boy, definitely, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, a good one.
And then, of course, the rebuilding began after that, didn't it, really, after the Cup final. And we saw the team that both of you were in that won the UEFA Cup, which deserves a round of applause, Capacity Crowd. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot went on, wasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, when Arnold and Franz came over, it was just... I'd not played many games for the team. Russell had played a few more, a good number more. But it was like with Kevin and Alan, with their injuries, you could see that they were really struggling.
Yeah.
So we had an opportunity, which if you get an opportunity, you got to take it. So we did pretty well after that. But it was when the Dutchman came, it was like a breath of fresh air. It was so exciting to see the skills that they had. People do different things to what the British footballers did. And to have two players like that, plus the Argentinians at Spurs as well. Yeah. So you had an influx.
But having Arnold and Franz allowed us to show our silky skills off at the back, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, Russell, but not me anyway. No, but they were good. It was a completely different attitude. And they would show you what to do, and you just you just did it.
Well, in the first games, the ball was just flying over the head, wasn't it? And yeah. it was Franz who came first. Arnold first, yeah. I remember talking to him before, and he was saying, the ball would just fly over my head. And, you know, Gaffer, what have you brought me here for? You know, and then it changed, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And I think we all had to understand our roles a little bit differently. And Alan Brazil, for example, would make these fantastic runs up front. And he would hesitate because he wasn't sure whether Arnold had seen him make the runs or not. And Arnold had to sit Alan down at halftime and say, Alan, just make the run. If I can get the ball there, I will get the ball there at the right time. You make your run, I'll deliver the ball. Okay? Sure enough, Alan started running with more confidence, making runs into the channels, and sure enough, the ball would just drop on his foot and he'd have a chance to go. And we had that as an option going forward. You know, you could pick out the late, great Paul Mariner, you know, because he was a target man, and if you were ever in trouble, it was just smack it at me, boys, and I'll make the most of it. You know, if it's by my feet, I'll get hold of it. If it's on my chest, I'll control it. If it's on my head, I'll flick it on. If it's over the top, I'll chase it, you know. And then we had Gatesy, and everybody sort of had a little role to play, didn't they? You know, and we didn't really have to talk about it. It just happened.
It was a new system, wasn't it? After 78, it was like a 4-3-3. We had the diamond, and it worked so well. I mean, it didn't take a lot of work to get it going, but we worked on it quite a bit on the training field. But when it came to the games, and particularly the home games. You remember the football we had, because Surridge, made by Surridge, and they called a Surridge cobbler. Remember that? Everybody hated that ball because they never had it. We always had it. We kept it, and they hated it. So if they hated coming to Ipswich with the ball, they hated coming to play the team, we're on a winner there. We do very well.
Talk me through that run to win the UEFA Cup. What are the memorable matches that stand out for either of you, actually?
The memorable games for me were the ones away from home, where, you know, you thought we're up against it, even though we'd shown good form at home. It wasn't in our best interest to have the home leg first, was it? Most of the time, you'd like to play away first and then have the second leg at home. Cologne, I can't remember who scored it. Cologne.
Oh, yeah, that was me, sorry, yes. I missed my cue as usual, yeah.
You know, rampaging up the left wing to whack one in or something like that, you know. That was great because there's a lot of the supporters over there. St Etienne sticks out because of some of the fun and games that were had before the game.
Like what? Take us through that side of things. We want to hear that, don't we?
Yes,
we want to hear that.
Well, Terry knows better than me some of the story. But allegedly, some of the lads went drinking the day before.
Not us, though.
Well, we didn't get caught.
Well, yes, that's very true, yes. That's the big secret.
So what I should have said, some of the lads got caught drinking before. Yeah, I think it was getting to that stage of the season where everybody was starting to flag a little bit. You know, we'd all played a lot of football. We were fit. We were very fit and strong as a group of players, and I don't think people actually gave us enough credit for that, you know. And it was hard work, but we'd put the hard work in on the training ground. And the day before the game against St Etienne, I think Bobby Robson said, listen, just chill out. If you want to go shopping, just, you know, don't worry about training. Just go and relax a little bit. Silly mistake. So we just, me and Terry, found a little quiet bar somewhere. I think we're just me and you. Or
yeah, just us two, yeah. We'd lost the others.
Yeah, they'd raced off to another bigger establishment and probably had a few more than we did. And somehow they got caught. Mr. Robson wasn't very happy about it. He was going to fine them a couple of weeks' wages after the game. And we'd heard that they'd been caught. Me and Terry thinking, Christ, thank God he didn't get hold of us as well. So we start the game and all of a sudden we're 1-0 down after 5 or 10 minutes, Johnny Rep scored. We think, oh, gosh, we've blown this. But the pitch was absolutely diabolical, wasn't it? It was an awful pitch to play on. And suddenly, it's one each, we're 2-1 up. Mariner's just battering hell out of their players up front, and Walker's tapping things in. And do you score there as well?
No, I think I set up two, but no, I didn't score.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Couple of
assists. There's only one. But Arnold scored a hell of a goal, didn't he? From like 30 yards.
It came across him from the right, outside the 18-yard box, and the ball's bouncing in this sludge and mud and everything. And he just smashes it into the top corner.
Wow. I mean, that lifted us enormously, because it's an away goal as well, in particular.
Brilliant.
And you sort of think, wow, here we go. And then
4-1.
Then we started to play the way that we can. But we were pretty used to crap pitches because we trained on a poor pitch at Portman Road.
So he let you off the fine then after that, did he?
Not us.
Well, the others.
He came in and said, you know, lads, forget that fine, you lot that were caught drinking.
But no, it was good. And it was something that you don't condone, but it was something that we needed something like that, just to go have a couple of beers and relax. We needed something like that, because it was a tense sort of period. We needed to do that. And then in Cologne, of course, Bobby, we're 1-0 up from Walkie's goal, the first leg. We lose to Norwich on the Monday, fly out on the Monday. Well done. I thought they'd gone to sleep here. And then Bobby on the Tuesday said, you know, go and enjoy yourselves, no training, go and enjoy yourselves at the fun fair. It was brilliant. Great bit of man management, it really was.
Yeah, fantastic. And then, of course, to win it, to lift the trophy, stuff of dreams, wasn't it?
Yeah, and again, it had been a long season. It had started to become a bit of a battle in the league, because we'd lost George at Easter.
No, he lost George in January.
January time? Yeah. So we lost George for probably a good third of the season. We lost Kevin after the beat. We lost Beat after the semi-final at Villa Park. And it was tough, and we were running on empty. So we played 64 games. We still got the semi-final, the first leg and the second leg of the final to do. And I still blame Franz Tyson for making the second leg so difficult, because he scored the early goal, which made it 4-0, and they just threw the absolute kitchen sink at us from then on. If it had just been 3-0 for a bit longer, then we'd have been okay, like, you know. But we went 4-0, and they just, like, Johnny Metgard, and, we got battered, didn't we?
Well, I had no doubt that we'd win. Not really at all. No, I was absolutely crapping it, to be honest. But it was... I still think we had a goal in hand, didn't we, at the end? So
yeah, Walkie scored second half.
Yeah,
didn't
but
he?
it was just battered. They just went 2-4-4, Graham Taylor sort of style.
Yeah.
And you having to deal with your own personal battle, and then if somebody got free, you're 2-1 against, and it was just waved and wave after attack. And we lost most second legs when you think about it, but we'd done enough in the first leg. So yeah.
What was the one on the snow and the ice?
Widzew Lodz.
Oh,
Widzew Lodz.
That was cold.
Yeah, that was cold.
That was very cold. But we had a big bottle of White Horse whiskey in the changing room,
We did. We always did,
Okay. Yeah. Well, Kevin had a good slug of that, didn't he?
He did, yeah. That's why Kevin came on with a short-sleeve
shirt. Yeah.
Shorts. Yeah. No tights or stockings, but the rest of us have got everything else on.
It was about -10, wasn't it? And we just had to get the game played.
The pitch was just white. Yeah. That's white as your trousers, Russell, but it's just white. And it was slippy as well, and really, really awful. You'd never play it now. UEFA would never allow that now, but, you know, that's the way it was.
Well, you won the UEFA Cup, and I think that deserves a big round of applause, doesn't it?
Thank you. Giving us
one of those fantastic stars on our shirt, along with 78 and the boys who won, of course, the First Division Championship. So, Russ, we haven't even touched on Escape to Victory yet. Maybe we'll do that in a moment or two. But I think it is time. You've watched all the shows so far, so you know what's coming, don't you?
Yep.
It is time, brought to you in association with Ginger Pickle, for our Keep It Up Challenge. So, I've got the whistle and I've got the ball. Just move my beer out of the way. And we've got a trophy there to hand out later on to the Man v Fat Boys. Russell, there you go. There's your ball. Okay. And I think he's actually doctored the area. Don't peek too soon, Russ. The goal's disappeared. You've got more room. The goal's disappeared. No, the plastic goal. Okay, all right. As you're one of us, we'll give you a bit of a head start. So you know how it goes. You've got 60 seconds. Butch is going to time you. The crowd are going to count you. Once you drop it on the floor, that's it. Are you ready? Okay?
Once I drop it on the floor, that's it.
Well, no, once you've stopped, that's... Come on, just get on with it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 21.
21 gives him a big come on, Russ. Well done. It puts you in, fourth or fifth place, because we can't remember how many Mickey Stockwell got. Can anybody remember? No, I think he's up there quite high. So maybe fourth place for you, Russ. Well done. But more than me, and certainly more than 4 second Phil Ham. But well done. Congratulations. Give him a round of applause. Now,
thank you. Can I mention this?
What's the book?
Has anybody read this? Ipswich Town on this day.
On this day, yep.
You might like this, Terry. I might have to put my glasses on for a minute for this. Excuse me. So on this day, three occurrences happened. Saturday, the 7th of September, 1946.
I remember it well, actually.
Town's first home league win over Norwich City. Yay! Yay! Saw the Blues triumph 5-0. Camberwell-born Albert Day scored a hat-trick on his debut.
Oh, God bless him.
Fair play.
Yeah.
Fair play.
It was a good day.
Yeah.
Tuesday, the 7th of September, 1971. George Best inspired Manchester United to victory in a 3-1 League Cup win over Ipswich. In the second half, a small section of the crowd began chanting for the sacking of Bobby Robson.
Ooh.
And the last entry here. Saturday, the 7th of September, 1996. Town crashed 3-1 to Huddersfield Town as Richard Wright was carried off with back spasms on 15 minutes. With no substitute goalkeeper, forward Neil Gregory was beaten three times. There you go. And all that happened on the 7th of September.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Fascinating when you look back, isn't it? Really, yeah. Fascinating when you look back. We've got lots of questions for you from our socials. Steve's been in touch. Who was Russell's toughest opponent and who was your favourite opposition player? So toughest opponent and someone that you liked to play against.
Toughest opponent. I think if you're having a bad day yourself, then everybody's a tough opponent. But somebody like David Speedy, I always found tricky to play against. Pretty quick, argumentative, could spring. He was only, about 5'6", but he could jump about 2.5 foot in the air, you know. So he used to pop up before you and get over the top of you and crack you with an elbow here and there. And he was a right little sod at times. So he was a difficult one to play with. Did you come across him much?
No, when I was at Coventry for my first job, I sold him. Sold him to Liverpool, so yeah. He was no trouble to me. In fact, I got a lot of money. I sold him for something like 625,000 cash to Dalglish. Oh, good deal. Very
good
happy.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Steve also goes on to say, another one, who did you room with on international duty? Was it one of the Town players?
No. No, my roomie, because we weren't in the squad a lot together, my roomie was Terry McDermott. He was second in command of the drinking squad.
Right.
Second only to Brian Robson, who was definitely captain of the drinking squad. Terry Mack, he spoke a bit funny, Terry, but super lad. And we used to meet up at the hotel on a Sunday night, wasn't it? West Lodge Park?
West Lodge Park,
West
yeah.
Lodge Park. So we used to meet for dinner. Meet your lads, you know, check in with your roommate and everything. No problem. Great giggle. Nice to see everybody. And there's a little pub down the road. I can't remember the name of it.
It's a White Hart.
I remember
it well. Fun memories.
So everybody would bomb on down there. Now, I only got 11 caps. So God knows how many times Terry went down into this pub, you know, on a Sunday night. But I used to go down there with Terry and Brian Robson and Ray Clemens and Shilton and Terry and Mariner and Keek. So it was like everybody went down there. Everybody went down there. And nobody left till about 1 o'clock in the morning. And you're training the next day. Apparently, Ron Greenwood caught somebody coming in at 11. Gave him a right bollocking, like, you know, didn't realise, like, he was the first one back. He thought he was the only one that had gone out. And Paul Manor had a problem one year because he actually roomed with Kevin Keegan. And Kevin wasn't the best drinker. And when Paul Manor came back to the room, he walked past the bathroom and Kevin had been sick on the floor. So Paul's thinking, well, normally I go straight to bed. But I can't leave that there, mainly because Norman Medhurst, the kit man, who brings your kit round at 8 o'clock the following morning and wakes you up and makes sure everybody's all right. He said, when Norman comes in and Norman sees that mess in the bathroom, he's not going to think that King Kevin did that, is he? He's going to think that's got to be Mariner. So Paul Myers was on his hands and knees at about 3 o'clock in the morning having to clean up after Kevin.
Dear.
Terry Mack, though, Terry McDermott, I roomed with him a couple of times, and he used to go, we all went down for dinner, and he would, a bit like Gazza, Gazza does this sometimes, he gets the napkin, and he would put some of the food in the napkin, yeah, and then wrap it up, and then take it back to the room.
Like a hamster.
Like a hamster.
Yeah.
So what he used to do, he would go to bed, and I'm reading my book and things like that, and Terry McDermott's there. So Terry McDermott would get into bed, but he would undo, make sure that the quilt or duvet wasn't tucked in, so it was loose. So what he would do, he would then get this food, and he'd put it underneath the bed, and then he would climb into the bed and cover himself up. And he stayed under the clothes, eating this food, all night. All night. I thought, it's not very sociable, is it? I thought, hang on a minute, he doesn't like me very much. Yeah. So I got no one to talk to. I remember talking to him, and he's like, because you couldn't understand it very much, and especially with the food, and then we had to waste the time.
We had a trip, and we went to Norway when it was Maggie Thatcher. We beat your boys, but all that palaver. And I'd met Halvard Thorensen, the Norwegian captain on escape to victory duty. So we played the game. I was rooming with Terry Mack, but after the game, we went and had a few beers, and I bumped into Halvard. Norwegian captain, he has got the keys to any bar that you want for the night. Everybody's throwing drinks at him, partying, and I'm just hanging on with him, just having a few drinks, and it developed into a bit of a session, and I got a little bit carried away and had a little bit too much to drink and found myself at a party and decided I'd better get back to the hotel. It's about 7:30 in the morning, so I'm walking around the corner. Still got my England club suit on and everything. And everybody was getting on the coach to go to the airport. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, yeah, okay. So as I've gone in to go upstairs, I'm trying to sneak in so that Robson and Greenwood don't see me. Terry Mack is actually coming and stepping onto the coach. And he's gone, it's all right, son, I've got all your gear, your bag's on, your passport's in my pocket. I've got the whole lot for you. You don't need to go in there. I've checked you out.
Brilliant.
And all my stuff was packed on the coach and everything.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Proper roommate.
Yeah.
Proper roommate. And Terry would have done that for
good
me.
Good stuff.
Well. Yeah.
Couple of very quick ones because time's beating us again. Justin, have you still got Basil Brush? Tell me about Basil Brush.
Basil Brush was a mascot that turned up for the FA Cup final. And apparently there's two of them. I've got one somewhere. Paul Cooper says he's got one somewhere. And I think somebody else has, they've got one. So I did know where it was, but I think I lost it because I got a lot of memorabilia ruined when my house got flooded years ago.
So poor Basil is no more.
I don't think he is, but you know, I think one of them might be out there somewhere still.
Okay, all right. And Dominic, favourite co-star in Escape to Victory?
Favourite co-star in Escape to Victory? Got to be Michael Caine. What a legend. He's an absolute gentleman.
You had dialogue
and a scholar.
With him, didn't you?
Yeah, we had dialogue the first day we were there. When we went out, we were just expecting to do the football scenes. And the first night we met Mike Summerbee, Bobby Moore, had a few drinks, and then somebody from the production staff came over and said, Russell, you've got dialogue with Michael Caine in the morning. I said, I don't think so. I'm one of the footballers from Ipswich. He said, yeah, we know. You've also got dialogue. You've actually got a character to play in the film. So you need to report at 6:30 to get your hair cut. Then you get your uniform, and then you'll have dialogue with Michael about 9 o'clock. There's your script. Wow. That was a bit of a, you know, was I 21, 22 at the time, and I'm thinking this can't be right. So all of a sudden, Kevin O'Callaghan's come over. He said, I've got dialogue as well. And that was it. Walkie, he had dialogue.
He had dialogue, didn't he? Yeah.
I've heard anything with that.
For those who don't know, just explain very quickly what happened to Walkie.
All he had to do was say, I'll take the top bunk. But in his strong Glaswegian accent, they couldn't understand him. So when we're at the preview, the showing and everything, when it first gets shown everywhere, he's told all the boys he's got this line, and of course it came to his scene, and it was somebody completely different. It was like an East London accent and everything. The lads are looking at Walkie saying, you know what, John's gone, you know, I haven't got that strong an accent, surely.
Well, he has. I mean, he needs subtitles wherever he goes. Yes. He really does.
Can't understand a word.
Yeah. But great fun. And we'll perhaps talk about that in future episodes.
I'm sure.
It's been great to sort of catch up with some of your history. You are one of our co-hosts. Next week, you'll be sitting over there.
I'm very honoured to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. Russell Osmond, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
We've got a presentation to do, which I'd like you to do, if that's okay.
Certainly.
We've got the boys here from Man V Fat. Pork Vale are here, everybody. Come on, Pork Vale. Come up to the microphone. Right, and just come right up to the microphone there, because we've got a trophy for you. To receive it, first there's Russell, who'll bring that over to you. So, well done, Pork Vale. Tell us about how this happened, how you've won the trophy.
Well, it's all about teamwork. You know, we have to lose weight to win games. So it's all about working together.
Fantastic. And Pork Vale have done it. Well done. Congratulations. The Man V Fat title.
Thank you.
Which is brilliant. Fantastic. Look after that. It's already got the name on there. And I've got the results coming in as well. I'll just flick on my phone just to get the results for this week's Man V Fat. This evening's scores coming up in a second. Overall champions and shield winners, as we mentioned there, Pork Vale. Cup winners, Far From Athletic. Pitch B winners were Man Titty.
Yeah.
And the Scales League winners, Seattle Quarter Pounders. There was a new league started on Friday, so let's have a little look and see how they're all going. To lose a few pounds, 5. Pork Vale, 9.
Yay!
Man Titty, 7.
Get in.
Far From Athletic, 6.
Yay!
And the Seattle Quarter Pounders, 12. LA Galaxy Bar, 4. So well done to all of the teams taking part in Man V Fat. We're just about done for today. Just a reminder, though, to check out our brand new website, which is www.lifesapitch.tv. We've got an event coming up at Venue 16 at Gresham's on the 30th of November. That's a charity event, Christmas dinner and everything. It will be a recording of the show, and then we're going to do a question of sport with you guys as team captains after the meal. We're also on the road at the Dove in Ipswich in St. Helens Street. All the details, www.lifesapitch.tv, and you can sign up there. And if you'd like to get involved with sponsorship, just email us, lifesapitchtv@gmail.com. A big thank you, as always, to DPS Tech, our main sponsor, also supported by All About Hearing, marketing company Ginger Pickle, Forward Floors, Come Hither Design, the Hudson Group, and Sound 4 Pro Audio. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe and like, smash those buttons, and we can get a better relationship than we have with YouTube at the moment. So we're doing very well, but we could do with a few more likes and subscriptions. Thank you, Capacity Crowd. Thank you. Well done. Been absolutely brilliant. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next week. And up the town, everybody.
Up the town. Well done.